D-Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, soon to be joined by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. My bad, Derek. I didn't mean to get you so riled up. I didn't think I struck a nerve there. But
well, it didn't until I sort of realized that they have let guys wear that jersey. And again, just be selective with certain things. Like when you start naming the names, I'm like, man, y'all hadn't been very selective with individuals. Just don't get it. But then, you know, the Frank thing, and I understand there may be other stuff involved. I get that part. But when I think of 89, I think of, you know, this franchise wouldn't have been, he was one of those guys that helped, you know, usher in this new franchise to a new city and helped us. He was a critical part of the success that we had. That especially that 99 season, hell, he was the one. He was the linchpin to the home run throwback. Come on, you can't just be
the Music City Miracle.
Yeah, Music City Miracle. You can't just be, you know, handing that number out all willy nilly. Just be selective, you know.
I hear you.
Selective, and no one has proven they are worthy to wear that number. They just hadn't up until this point.
Yeah, I do think, and Bob from Mount Juliet with the contrarian approach says it's okay to have someone wear a retired number for a player in the Hall, but we have to complain about giving out numbers to non-retired. So it's okay to have someone wear a retired number for a player in the Hall, but we have to complain about giving out numbers to non-retired numbers that didn't get in the Hall.
This is two different. This is not the same franchise. That number for the Houston Oilers, I think, will always be retired. That number one, that jersey number, that color, those names will never be in circulation again. And if we still were the Houston Oilers, I think there would have been a bigger outcry. That matter of fact, they probably wouldn't have gave it to him. But because it's not, it's a little bit easier, I believe, to stomach. And Warren said it was okay. Listen, Frankie, if you've been around here long enough, since 1997, you know what Frank meant to this organization in those, especially in those early years. You don't have to retire. Eddie and Steve are not in the Hall of Fame. They should be, but they're not, and their numbers are retired and will not. No one will dare put on a number 27 or number 9 again. I hope they don't. I just think Frankie's one of those guys that, you know, when you start talking about Eddie and Steve, you need to start talking about Frankie and Blaine. Those are the guys, B-Hop. I'm just saying, just be selective when you give that number out, because there are people that still work there, I'm sure, in that equipment room that have been there since this organization came, that understands what that number 89 is. Again, I don't know all of everything that sort of went down during that time, but just I would hope that they would be more selective when giving out, you know, a 89 or a 23 or a 53.
And I understand that in football versus hockey, mm-hmm. there are a lot more players, especially during training camp when there are upwards of 90 players, and there are only so many numbers to go around. And if I'm not mistaken, sometimes multiple players wear the same number mm-hmm. in training camp, just because there, again, are only so many numbers. So I understand it's more difficult in football to take numbers out of circulation mm-hmm. than it is in hockey. For example, as I mentioned in the previous hour, this was before Shea Weber was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. He was still an active player, I think. Well, he might have been on long-term injured reserve. He wasn't formally retired, I don't think. But the outcry was so big from Predators fans about another player wearing number 6 that they ultimately pivoted and Phil Myers wore a different number. And I just went back through the history of Predators numbers. Of course, the Predators only have one number retired so far. That's Pecorine, number 35. Shea Weber will join him, I'm sure, sooner rather than later. But even, like, I looked up the number 12. Mm-hmm. Mike Fisher wore the number 12 for several years. Captain of the Nashville Predators. You know, big part of this community. The Predators have allowed two players to wear number 12 since Mike Fisher retired the second time. Because, mm-hmm. remember, he did come back briefly from retirement. And it's easier to take numbers out of circulation in hockey because mm-hmm. there are fewer players on the team. But it is an interesting debate. Like, I generally side on when it comes to the retired number mm-hmm. thing. I generally side on the idea that, like Mike Sando said, like Trevor Sikkema said, if the number is retired, it needs to be retired. Yeah. That's my point. So, but when it comes to certain numbers being taken out of circulation, they aren't formally retired, mm-hmm. but they are effectively retired. I do think that team should be judicious handing out numbers that aren't officially retired, but mean something to the organization. So that's where
he's in your ring of honor. Frankie, mm-hmm. he's in your ring of honor. And that means a lot, a whole hell of a lot. He's in your ring of honor. So I'm just saying, just be more selective in when you're handing out that number. Let the guy, it's almost like, okay, first round pick, okay, got some talent. Okay, let's try it. But I'm not just giving it to anybody. Like, oh, here. Free agent here, other guy, you can just have, they brought you in signed to, a 10-day contract. You don't do that. You do that in basketball, not NFL. But essentially, it is a 10-day contract because what they do is they sign you and then they cut you the next week. So essentially, it's a 10-day contract. Don't give a guy like that number 89.
So Cam Ward will wear number one mm-hmm. for the Tennessee Titans because Warren Moon gave him his blessing to wear that number. And earlier this week, Derek, we were talking about the success of rookie quarterbacks drafted number one overall. Mm-hmm. And I just looked at their win-loss records. But you brought up something that you think is vital to the success of a rookie quarterback, regardless of where that rookie quarterback is selected, and that is a defense. Mm-hmm. And Teron Davenport wrote a story for ESPN.com recently looking at some of the questions that the Titans still face after drafting Cam Ward. One of the questions is, who steps up? Actually, that's not the question. Did the Titans address pass rusher sufficiently? The other question is, who steps up at inside linebacker, which is involved in the defense, obviously. But this is what Teron Davenport writes about the pass rusher scenario. Quote, ESPN draft analyst Jordan Reed mentioned Femi Oladejo, as one of the pass rushers who could make an immediate impact after a solid showing during practices at the Senior Bowl in January. Oladejo has shown traits to rush the passer, easy for me to say, geez, but he is relatively inexperienced as an outside linebacker. He played most of his college career at inside linebacker before moving to outside backer midway through his senior season. Releasing outside linebacker Harold Landry leaves a void, though. Landry had 31.5 sacks over the last three seasons, and the Titans currently don't have a player who has recorded double-digit sacks in a season. The outside pass rusher rotation will consist of veterans Arden Key, Ali Gay, and Jalen Harrell, free agent additions Draymond Jones and Lorenzo Carter, and Oladejo. The Titans do have the luxury of getting added pressure from the interior of the line with Pro Bowl defensive lineman Jeffrey Simmons and 2024 second-round pick Tavondre Sweat. So it's not just limited to the mm-hmm. pass rusher position. Again, we mentioned the inside linebacker position as well. Teron Davenport writes, quote, the Titans signed free agent Cody Barton to give the inside linebacker position a veteran in the room. Barton posted over 100 tackles in each of the last three seasons with the Broncos, Commanders, and Seahawks, respectively. He will be one of the starters. The other inside linebacker position will come down to a competition among a group of young players looking to break through. Third-year linebacker Otis Reese will be in a battle with 2024 draft pick Cedric Gray and James Williams. Collectively, the young trio played 244 defensive snaps last season, with 109 of them coming from Williams. That number will need to increase dramatically this year. So a lot of questions on the defensive side of the ball. So there isn't much more they can do to shore up this position. Free agency is over. The draft is over. Maybe a veteran shakes loose during training camp. Teron mentioned Za'Darius Smith as a player who is still available. But, Derek, do you see a defense on paper right now that can help Cam Ward this season?
I'm not sure. I'm really not. Obviously, you look at the two big fellas in the middle, Sweat and Simmons. And they, I believe they will be a dominating duel this year. You know, Sweat's second year, I think he's going to learn. He's learned a lot. I think he's going to be in better football shape. Not to say he wasn't in great shape, good shape last year, but that second year of just a full year to work out and not train for a combine or not train to do certain drill specific things. No, you are working as an NFL player now, so your offseason is a little bit different. So I expect Tavondre Sweat to come back even better, which will make that defensive line a lot better. I hate to see teams try to run on them this season if indeed they play up to the standard.
Well, Jeffrey Simmons did say that during the season. Nobody runs on the Tennessee Titans. Better, and it was the Indianapolis Colts who had about 500 rushing yards, give or take, game.
I think this second season will be a lot better. But when I look at teams with young quarterbacks, and I only go based upon my experience, is the Baltimore Ravens drafted Joe Flacco in 2008.
And we're going to talk about that later.
But I'm just going to give you just a brief thing. They drafted him in 2008. He wasn't supposed to be the starter. Troy gets hurt. I mean, Troy gets deathly sick, like truly deathly sick. He was in the hospital, lost a bunch of weight.
A serious tonsil infection for Troy Smith.
So Joe ended up being the starter.
And Kyle Bowler was hurt too, I think.
Kyle Bowler was hurt. Steve had just retired. So he was basically, he was it. It was it for him. He was the guy. And the one thing that I truly believed helped Joe Flacco is our defense. You know how many points we gave up that year?
How many?
On our way to having a, I think, 12-5 season, they gave up 11 points per game.
Pretty
11
good.
11 points per game. You know how many times Joe Flacco threw over 200 yards? Five times he threw over 2 yards.
And he started every game, right?
And he started every game. He only threw over 200 yards five times. We ran the football.
You had Ray Rice, right? Yeah,
Ray Rice and – no, we had Willis McGahee, Ray Rice, and LaRon McClain. Now, LaRon McClain and Willis McGahee had just come off 1,000-yard seasons.
Ray Rice was drafted that same year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Ray Rice was drafted. Yeah. They both were 1,000-yard rushers. Or I think McClain might have been 900, but I think McGahee was 1,000 or was close to it. But we had a hell of a backfield. And then you add in a Ray Rice, who was – he was one of those guys that changes an offense instantly because of what he can do, not just running a football, but catching a football. He was a hell of a pass catcher out the backfield out of Rutgers. So you get him a great running game, you get him an offensive line, you get him a defense, and you get him guys that are consistent at catching the football and making plays when you need them to make it. And we went 12-5 that year. Not necessarily because the quarterback played great, because we didn't have to put the quarterback in a position where he had to go out there and throw for 400 or 500 yards or score 35 points every other week. No, our defense only gave up 11.6 points per game. That helps out the quarterback immensely. That's what the Titans, we talk so much about the offense, and I understand that. I talked a lot about it. Getting the offensive line shored up, getting some more playmakers, that needs to happen. But if that does come to fruition that they do play well, if you ain't got no defense, now what we're doing, we're asking Cam to win every game, and that's unfair. You help a rookie quarterback out by getting you a defense that is going to be one of the tops, at least in scoring defense or points given up, one of the top defenses in the National Football League. If the Titans give up only 15 points per game, this is a team I believe will win 8 games, maybe even 9 games. If they give up, let's say, if they give up 17 or less, they give up 17 or less, this will be a much better team than what we saw last year.
There are just a lot of question
marks. Unless the quarterback just bombs out, which I don't think he will.
There are a lot of question marks. The relative inexperience at inside linebacker, as Teron Davenport mentioned. what the fate of L'Jarius Sneed is with the issue with the law that we talked about a few weeks ago.
The depth of the roster on defense.
Right. They bring in Xavier Woods. You have Jarvis Brownlee in his second season. Roger McCreary, Imani Hooker, you know, rushing the passer. Jeffrey Simmons, Devondre Sweat, Sebastian Joseph Day. There are just a lot of question marks about this defense. And remember, for a lot of last season, the Titans had, quote-unquote, the number one defense in terms of yards allowed. But I think it was because they were playing on a lot of short fields because Will Levis was turning the ball over. It was a bit misleading, their ranking in that area. But I completely understand your point. And I'm curious to see if there are any veteran players who become available throughout the summer who can help the Titans on defense. 615-737-1025. Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow will join us coming up next. 615-737-1025. The 615 Open Charity Golf Tournament benefiting Folds of Honor presented by Gary Force Acura at Hermitage Golf Course is Thursday, May 29th. That's 3 weeks from tomorrow. Sign up to play or sponsor at 615open.com. D-Mace Fingan and Donick, 1025, 1063 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Fingan, joined, as we are every Wednesday, by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. Hello, Hutton. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you guys?
We are doing well. I riled Derek up on accident talking about numbers that were not taken out of circulation.
Or at least numbers they should have been really selective in handing back out.
Chigga Conquo was on notice for wearing number 85. Let's just put it to you that way.
It's not even that, really, Hutt. It's the names outside of Nate Washington. The names that have donned the 85 isn't a good list.
No, it's not.
Mace, do you think players today know as much about the history of the organization they're playing for as you did?
No, they don't. They,
why not?
Because it's not about that with them. It's truly not. But
it can be about that with the organization they play for.
Yeah, you're right. It can be. But I don't think these young people, I don't think they put in enough time to want to know about the organizations that they potentially will be drafted by. They're not looking at the history and the past players and all that stuff. They don't want to know. They don't. They can walk through the building and not know anything outside of what they see on the walls. They don't. And it's like you said, it's really sad in a sense because when you walk through that, when I came into Houston Oilers, I knew I could rattle off those guys that played. Because I sat and I watched and the history of you, even though they were not in Detroit, I watched them play and I understood the history of football in general, especially when it comes to players. I don't think these young men look at it that way anymore.
The last coach that the Titans had who gave a damn about that was Mike Munchak.
Yes, yes.
And he put that Oilers mural up in the locker room. You remember this?
Yeah.
Ken Whittingham came in and painted over that pretty fast. And that's the last of the history of the Tennessee Oilers and anything else to do in that building, like specifically with the players I'm talking about. The players would pass it every day. That was it. Like it was, I don't, you know, now it's a slogan, I'm sure, which all teams are doing that, whatever it might be, play tough or whatever. But, you know, Vrabel's not coming in knowing the history of the team that way.
No.
Or should he, right?
But, no.
Munchak knew it and made it a purpose. And I think that's probably the last time. That's around Nate Washington's last few years, wasn't it?
I think so.
That's probably the last time that group knew anything about the history of the team and where they came from.
It's just outside of the names everybody know. Steve,
sure.
Eddie.
You.
Frankie. No, not even me. Steve, Eddie, Frank, Javon, maybe Bullock. You ask those young guys in there, like, go down a list of great players that just wore Titan uniforms.
Let me give you an example.
They couldn't go past. The first people they would say, obviously, is Steve and Eddie. Then they said Derrick Henry. And then they may get to Frank or Javon. But other than that, They don't. And this is where, and they may not like me over here after this one. But I'm just, it's not like I'm about to go off on them. But this is my truth and only mine. Outside of those few names, the organization doesn't tell a story of the 97, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003, 2014. They don't, outside of a few players. So when these young guys come in, that's all they see. They don't know about a Blaine Bishop. They don't know about a Derek Mason. They don't know about a Brad Hopkins. They don't know about these guys that were trenched in this organization that were ballers, like legit ballers. They don't know anybody, and that's the organization's fault. I do blame that on them.
Well, and it's the culture again. Like it's the young franchise, right? Where mm-hmm. we remember all the names, but you know who we're leaving. Like Mace, you're one of the. I mean, you're the wide. They're one of the few wide receivers this franchise has had. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just say it like that. Like you are
besides myself and AJ Brown.
Okay,
I'm like Nate because he put up some damn good years when he was here, but he came from another organization. We're talking about people that were drafted by the Tigers.
Let's go. Well, even guys that they came in and renovate, like they totally rehauled and overhauled who they were. Let's mention Kyle Vandenbosch. When's the last time mm-hmm. that guy's name's been mentioned in this franchise?
You're right.
He set the tone at practice every day. That's whenever I was starting out.
But he was a dog on a field too,
dude. Yes, I mean again, like there's more. There's even layers to it, mm-hmm. And I think that's also where the franchise has to go. Mace is mm-hmm. I see numbers now, and I still think about your era. Mm-hmm. No, I mean you see what I'm saying.
Yes.
They have to establish the next stars. They haven't done that. I mean,
no,
we think
you're
about
right.
Number 10, and we think about not getting it done at quarterback. You know, mm-hmm. like. Now we think about number one, we're going to see Warren Moon through that number, mm-hmm. but that's like the next, that's the not just the goal, that's the demand of what they're doing with Cam Ward. They have to establish the next line of last names on a jersey, because I can't tell you the last time that I've seen anybody clamor for a jersey, like in the promotion of it, you know?
Because my thing is they need to be more selective.
That comes to the territory of drafting offensive linemen in the first round too. Like that doesn't help the star power. But I mean, that's the goal, is establishing these guys with the number. They just haven't done it. And they also haven't been, you know, it's not like Chigakonkwo is going to live up to 85.
Mm. I only remember, I remember two numbers at the wide receiver position. That's my number and A.J. Brown's number. I'm talking about numbers like, okay, the 11 and an 85. You don't think about any other. You see what I'm saying? You don't 80, think.
87 with Dyson.
And 87 with Dyson. So it's 85, 87, and 11. If you want to throw Drew in there because he had a hell of a year that one year, and he was a productive receiver, not so much so after I left, but he was productive while I was, while I was here. Guys like that, they just don't. And maybe it's just me. Maybe it's sour grapes. I don't know. And I can't admit that. I'm not too proud to say, hey, sometimes I've been a little butthurt. But that's just me. Well, that's just me. You know, I'm not too proud to say I haven't been at times. But maybe it's just me in this this is one of the moments, maybe.
I'm okay with a little pettiness,
okay.
Derek. It's okay. I think everybody.
I will admit it.
Go ahead.
Let's say a rookie. Mace, you're playing mm-hmm. nowadays. You're playing today. Mm-hmm. A rookie calls you up and wants 85. What are you responding with?
You got to earn it.
I mean.
That flat out. You got to earn it.
Call me back in a couple of years?
Yeah, call me back. A matter of fact, just call. If you have a damn good. Call me back after the season and see where I'm at. Because I know after a while, you get used to
your
number
price.
And you just keep it. But my thing is, no, you haven't. You haven't earned it yet, young man.
I agree with you.
Hutton,
good job, Adam.
I'm learning. I'm learning every day. Hutton, usually we don't rely on the Wall Street Journal to break sports news, but the Wall Street Journal broke a story a few days ago. The Trump administration is considering an executive order that could increase scrutiny of the explosion in payments to college athletes since 2021 after the president met with former Alabama coach Nick Saban. Trump met with Saban after – Trump delivered the University of Alabama's commencement address. According to the Wall Street Journal, Trump said he agreed with Saban and would look at crafting an executive order. People familiar with the meeting said Trump told aides to begin studying what an order could say, the people said. Because Saban talked about NIL deals with Trump, telling the president how he believed the influx of money had damaged college sports. How do you feel about Nick Saban having this conversation and trying to spur on this executive order?
I love it. I mean, it's what has to, it's what needed and was required to happen, is Nick Saban be at some level of leadership in this. He's already, if you think about it, he's already kind of the de facto commissioner of college football because he sits on College Game Day and he's asked these questions every single week. Anything controversial or anything that's going to be about the business side or the coaching side, we want Saban's opinion. So that he's already, his voice carries a lot of weight. By President Trump going and meeting with Saban, that tells me moving forward, he will be involved. Saban will be involved because I think Trump would then lean on him and include him in this process. And this is the same guy that said, you're going to need a lawyer. You're not going to want really a coach. I have to have a coach or someone that knows ball in these talks. The next stage of this would be the players need to be represented. That hasn't happened at any stage of this. Football players, I'm saying, not student athletes as they're having represented on Capitol Hill. I don't need a swimmer representing a football player. I'm saying that there are levels to it. I think the overall governing body has to be established through some type of legislation that has states equal on an equal playing field, because right now it's just state law to state law, and whatever Tennessee allows and what Texas allows versus what Illinois can allow. That's where it all started in 2021. That's where it really got awry. And it got out of hand and lawsuits started happening. So I think we have to have some order to it, but the only order that's going to require anyone to pay attention to, here are the guidelines, it's going to come from the very top. And it's the federal government in some way, and it's going to come through Saban. I mean, if you think about the voices of college football, he's someone I want speaking on my behalf if I'm college football.
There's a graph in this story in the Wall Street Journal that says, quote, Saban didn't propose ending NIL, but reforming it, according to a person with direct knowledge of the meeting. He described how it was causing an uneven playing field, the people said, with an arms race among powerhouse schools.
The height of the hypocrisy.
I was about to say, critics of Nick Saban, Hutton, would say Nick Saban benefited greatly from there being an uneven playing field.
It's hypocritical, but it's also... I hear that, and I think reform. He's also speaking on the players' behalf in saying that, because he's old school. I don't think he likes where college football went. But do players deserve to be played? Yes. I'm looking at this going the NIL. The heart of NIL is a good thing. If someone at Michigan State's wearing 85 and they're selling 85 jerseys, I'm just saying, like D. Mace made. You see what I'm saying? Like
no. Okay.
There needs to be a number. Like Peyton Manning was wearing 16 in college, and I see a lot of 16 Tennessee jerseys.
Still to this day. Exactly. And they're making money.
I get that. But, at the end of the day, there are still the haves and the have-nots. And, you got Texas paying $50 million or whatever it is for $30 million, excuse me, $25 to $30 million on a roster. And there's no way that more than let's just cap it at 10. Mm-hmm. Is there more than 10 programs across the country that can do what Texas is doing? I say less than that. So it's still about the haves and the have nots. But if there are guardrails and some guidelines to follow, that's a great thing. Now, who's enforcing them? It's got to be more than the NCAA, because the NCAA is still trying to figure out if Connor Stallions was stealing signs.
Yeah, this is to me. Listen, Saban is a great coach. He will always be considered the greatest college coach and probably the second greatest football coach or third greatest, however you want to label it. But this is just it's hypocrisy. Hypocrisy at its finest. They had opportunities to take care of this. Okay, the only way you're going to take care of this if you collectively bargain it. I don't need the government to get in
sports.
That's right. Okay, everybody. Now all of a sudden we want government in sports, whereas stay out of it. you know, government doesn't need to be here. No, but now you want them involved. I don't want government anywhere near this because government wasn't near when these universities were making money hand over fist from these sports teams, whether it be football, basketball, or baseball. No one was coming in and saying, hey, we need to regulate how much these ADs and these presidents and these head coaches are making. Let's make sure the playing field stays level so Alabama doesn't have the ability to pay Nick Saban $9 million, whereas the University of Cal can't pay a coach $5 million, I mean $9 million, so they're not going to get the best coach. Let's start there. I didn't hear any, oh, let's legislate that, you know, out of college football. But all of a sudden, now that these men and women, young men and women, are making money hand over fist, I get it. All of the movement that is driving me crazy, guys and girls transferring. But it's your fault. So don't sit here and now try to bring the government in a divisive, and not just the government, you're bringing in a divisive individual.
Cut and hold that thought. We will go to break. 615-737-1025. I had him going again. 615-737-1025. Hutton will allow you to respond to that on the other side. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, joined by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. We were discussing a report from the Wall Street Journal earlier this week, over the weekend maybe, about Nick Saban discussing with President Trump an executive order that could help address payments to college athletes. Hutton, I will allow
And I'm not riled up at you, Hutton.
I know. Yeah. But I will allow Hutton.
You can't
to,
be. You can't be. Fine.
I want to read to you, Hutton, a column from Blake Topmeyer of USA Today Network. And I want to get your response, and you can also respond to Derek. Quote, Nick Saban thinks college football needs to be fixed and that the federal government should become involved in the fixing. Senator Tommy Tuberville of Alabama shares that belief, and he warns that the sport is, quote unquote, in danger. In danger of what exactly? Also, how and why should the federal government be involved in fixing college football's problems in so much as they exist? And goodness me, why should President Donald Trump insert himself into this situation? I've heard few coherent solutions from Saban or Tuberville. Mostly, I hear complaints from two retired coaches pining for the good old days when coaches enjoyed omnipotence and ruled like kings, while athletes enjoyed fewer freedoms and less compensation. Blake Topmeyer continues, again, I ask, why should Trump be involved? How would an executive order lawfully and effectively improve college football? Why should the president restrict athlete movement or place regulations on college athletics' unfettered name, image, and likeness marketplace that state legislation and the court system unlocked? How would uncorking a presidential bailout for the NCAA, an unpopular organization, amount to good politics?
Well, I in general, I ask those same questions, especially about Senator Tuberville, because he's already presented and co-authored bills that have been on the floor. Now, representing that, if you read through it, it is a lot about going back to what it was and the guidelines. I think that's my fear, is not legislation on about federal government getting a piece of the pie or whatever we fear there, or non-football people doing football things, whatever. I think it's more about just going back to the way it was, which is not going to be sufficient in this. Look, President Trump, like him or don't, I think he does over his history, he can get some deals done. He gets people together, and he's making a commencement speech at the graduation speech at Alabama that has him chatting with Nick Saban. So I like the fact that Saban is in a way a face of this just as well as President Trump. Federal government does not have to be, it doesn't have to make a law about this. I think it can be. Again, I go back to guardrails. The players need to be employees. That's how you get to a collective bargaining agreement. Right now, there's nothing of the sense. And there need to be contracts. There were over 3,000 players that entered the portal in college that now play for a different team over the last year. 3,000 plus. So with that in mind, and there's no contract, so you just do it again next year. Nico can transfer next year if he wants to from UCLA. So that's the difference between everyone who compares it to the NFL. It's not the NFL, because in the NFL you have a collective bargaining agreement, a CBA with contracts, and if you don't like the team you're on, demand a trade, or you know, you have to honor it in some way, at least from the player's side. From the school side, I mean, again, if with or without it, you're always going to have the haves or the have-nots. But with the structure we have right now, Texas is loading up ahead of whatever cap could possibly be coming. They're loading up on their roster now because there's no order in this. And they know they're one of the very, very few that can go out and try to, you know, buy a roster around Arch Manning, who's not receiving any of the collective money. So, you know, whatever we want to call it, someone's got to lead it. And it's not going to be the NCAA. And it's not going to be just a random Joe like me in Nashville shouting that Nick Saban needs to lead things. It's got to come from the top, or it's just not going to happen. And if the players want to be represented, I think this is the best route to do it. Because right now, yes, the very top 1% are making a lot of money. But if you start looking around, I mean, the players themselves are not, and it just have to be football. It could be across the board. There's a reason why universities don't want to have employees in all this. There's a reason why they don't want to have a collective bargaining agreement. Because right now, if you really look at the funds going into the university, what's the real percentage of the money that actually goes to the player? How is that money going to the university and then getting to the player? And who's negotiating those contracts? If it's going through the university, then represented by the quarterback, for instance. I don't really know the funnel system there. This would solve that. I think it actually benefits the player more to have representation. And right now, there's no one speaking on their behalf. There's no former player I'm pointing to the way I could point to say.
Well, there should just be a collective bargaining. That's what it should be, because that's what ultimately we're coming up on. And again, you run the country. Find a way to run the country, okay? Work deals to run the country. Don't try to work deals to run college sports. That's not your realm. I'm not going to ask a mechanic to fix my plumbing. I'm just not going to do it. I don't need the government trying to fix college football. College football is broken because you broke it, not the government. The government, on the country. Well, let Saban get a team together.
If he's speaking on behalf of the people, how many of the people would want college football to get back to something of order?
It's capitalism. Don't complain about it now. Don't complain about it now. It's capitalism.
I'm just saying, like, how do you represent such a large group that is the student athlete? I'm saying student athlete in jest.
But this is not about.
That's the NCAA. The NCAA is still saying student athlete.
Exactly. But what this is not about. This is not about everybody. This is not about the country. When the president gets involved, it's about the country. This has nothing to do with the country. It really doesn't. This has to do with universities, and more importantly, this has to do with athletes, whether you want to call them student athletes. I call them athletic students, people that's going to college, getting a degree, but they're there to work in their athletic realm. That's what they're there to do. But my thing is, let the college people figure out the college stuff. Figure out the other stuff for the country. I don't want
– If it's not going to be – from the top, it's going to be from Disney and ESPN.
No. But my thing is, listen, the government isn't the top. They're not the top. We're talking about sports.
I'm not talking about a bill and a law passed. An executive order is just getting things done.
I don't want his name. Just like I wouldn't have wanted Biden's name. Just like I wouldn't have wanted Obama's name. Or Bush's name. I don't want them attached to college sports in no way, because it becomes a political football then. And then once it becomes a political football, it becomes even more division. I don't want that. Keep that. They've for years, shut up and dribble, catch the ball and dribble. But now all of a sudden, bring the government in now. No, stay out.
But the government's always been there. There have been multiple bills. There have been over 12.
I understand that.
Capitol Hill about this.
No, I get that part. But when you try to come in and say, well, let's legislate the money that is being paid. Okay, while we're at it, legislate the money that is being paid to these coaches. All right, if we want to do that, then there's a cap on the coaches and there's a cap on the players. You know who would go for that? Nobody.
Okay, but see, when I say the government's always been there, right now it's state to state.
Yeah.
So it's the government deciding that. Like, the state of Tennessee sued the NCAA on behalf of NECO. So it's still – the government's already involved at a big level. Mm-hmm. It's just like if Kansas doesn't want to do it but Tennessee does, then you benefit across the state of Tennessee as being NIL that's going to be able to pay you more. Or Sense of the NCAA has no power in the state of Tennessee. They've got more governance over Kansas. If Kansas doesn't want to step up and attack the NCAA and have the Commonwealth of Virginia jump on board with that too, like it that's already been there. Mm-hmm. This is just more. It depends on how you look at it. Do you want the government overseeing all the states and having some type of order? Every state decide if they
want
to do it.
I want college sports, whoever's at the top, get up off their asses and do what they need to do to correct this. They don't need to be trying to go get Big Brother to say, "Oh, let's go, please correct this." No. Y'all again, I go back to it. Y'all had opportunities to take care of this. We all saw it coming down.
They lost. It was a unanimous vote in the Supreme Court that got this going.
Exactly.
And the NCAA, any semblance, any threat of a lawsuit, and they're out. They're afraid of being of a lawsuit at every corner because the Supreme Court in that ruling said there are other issues in litigation that could come up with this where you're probably going to fail.
So once again, we want to bypass, make
order on your own.
So now we want to bypass what the Supreme Court. Now the Supreme Court says, okay, let these young men and women, they should be able to get paid. They should be able to monetize, whatever. The court said that. Now we want to shift to the president and say, hey, president, try to clean up this stuff. Because the Supreme Court gave the okay, which they should have. But now it's like, oh, let's go. We didn't really like what the Supreme Court said. Let's go to the president. Regardless of who the president is.
Figured out. But hear me out. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying whatever plan he comes up with, I'm going to be on board with.
Exactly.
Whatever comes with. I'm just saying, thank God someone's trying something.
What's Sabi
saying? If they want to get, because again, like there have been bills that have been proposed that have not passed on the floor.
Already
trying to rule. Mm-hmm. So like I'm glad those didn't pass because it's just more or less back to Tommy Tuberville's coaching days. I wasn't for that. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm for the player being represented.
Exactly.
But I don't know how to get that going.
It's going to be a hard task. I get it because the horse is out of the barn now. It's hard to get him back in. But why don't the SEC, the heads of all of these, get together, like, and seriously, because it seems like everybody's just want to, they figure eventually, all of this is going to split up. It's going to just be the SEC, the Big Ten, and maybe the ACC, however they figure these other conferences out. There's only really going to be three major conferences, and then we can take care of it then.
So my fear in that is if the conference, the top conference, you're talking about the SEC and the Big Ten, right? Mm-hmm. Because the others just follow what they do. They're taking less in grant of rights just to be a part of the pack. Mm-hmm. So it's really two conferences, and it's really it's really one TV network. So it's either Disney's going to run things, or there's going to be it doesn't have to be a strict ruling body. Mm-hmm. It can just be, again, it can be a guardrail. It doesn't have to be a line down the middle of the pavement. So like it keeps you on course in some way. Because again, right now, we were talking numbers earlier. Like who knows what your favorite college team, your players, who knows who wears 85 anymore? Mm-hmm. Because it's a different player every year.
But my thing is, okay, just a template. Look at the model of the NFL or the NBA or whatever. Just get a template. And if you say there's a cap on every team, there's a cap. Yeah. Not saying you can't play X player, X amount of money, but it runs like the NFL. We got a salary cap, and we got to get everybody within the salary cap based upon television revenue and all this other stuff. But I don't think they want to do that. Because we start negotiating the revenue from the television, that's when the money gets huge, and they don't want that.
No doubt. I mean, look, let's look at it from the perspective of so there was the House versus the NCAA settlement. Mm-hmm. A former player who sued, he's in the Olympic sport, I believe, sued the NCAA for past NIL rights or money. Well, there's a settlement now with the NCAA on that, and coming of that is going to be this $20.5 million cap.
Doesn't it go back to 2012, I think, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But with that in mind, like they're already trying to put something in plan in place so they don't get or they have a plan the next time they get sued moving forward. Like there's going to be a cap. So I mean, again, it's way over my head. I understand why Saban said lawyers need to be involved. I'd rather have Saban and someone like him.
You know,
again,
eventually lawyers got to get involved. Yes,
on behalf of the sport more than the business, mm-hmm. and you have to have both. You have to have both. There's always going to be the business side of anything, but at least I got a little ball discussion in that. You know what I mean? Like we're talking some ball mm-hmm. and what it means on the field more than it means at the concession. Or honestly, the fan. Mm-hmm. The fan's getting the extra 10% on their ticket. It's called a talent tax. It's just extra money so they can go out and you know, keep their budget going while they pay players, too. They're trying mm-hmm. to get the same revenue they had prior. So it's all business. I just want to know that if I'm paying the 10%, what about the state, my interstate rival? Are they on the same guidelines, or are they just going to go up to 20% and then I'll be taxed 20%? If I'm a fan, I want to know, like, what's the structure here? And I think right now it's just kind of like in certain fan bases mm-hmm. don't really care what they pay. They're always going to be part team owner. There's a feeling of that. And quite frankly, there's
Green Bay Packers.
People at every university that probably play team owner. I don't know who they are. And
now you're right about that.
So at least with that in mind, I get some semblance of order, because otherwise you can make the college football playoff and feel like you won something, but the money's still going to the same universities.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton
and
Withrow,
the same players.
Joining us on the program. Hutton, great stuff, my friend. We'll chat next week.
Thank you, Hutton.
Thank you. I always enjoy this, guys.
Thank you. Talk next week. Jonathan Hutton on the program. I'm getting Derek all riled up today. Topic choices and such. 615-737-1025. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game.